born in Elbridge?
Right here, 76 years ago.
Uh-huh. And you lived here pretty much all your life?
All my life, except when I was playing ball out of town in the winter, summertime. We couldn't wait to get back here in the summertime. We never stayed where we played ball. Always came back here.
Okay. And in high school, when you were a kid growing up, did you just play baseball?
Or oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I played. I got 15 letters in high school altogether. Baseball, soccer, basketball, and track and field. There was 15 of them. Now, high school was right down the road. Of course, it was smaller high schools then, you know.
That, which high school was that?
Elkridge. Oh. Elkridge High School. And, of course, that's all I ever wanted to do was play baseball. My teachers all in school used to raise devil. They said, Jack Merson, if you just forget about baseball, and take care of your study, you've been A student. Well, I got a C. That's all I wanted to get.
And you were in high school 3 years?
Oh, 4 years.
4 years. 4 years in high school. Okay.
Seven in elementary and four in high school at that time.
Do you have any other brothers who played the ball?
Or? Well, they played the high school ball, but they never were ambitious enough to carry on. Now, my oldest son, he could have been a ball player. He's about 6'3", he weighs about, well, he's a little overweight now, but he weighed about 210 when he was younger. He could throw the ball through the wall. I mean, he was, but he never forward. So I never pressed him. I didn't want to press him. Of course, I'm the oldest of nine. It's five boys and three girls. Now, all the boys played baseball, per se. I mean, it's one time or another with minor league amateur teams, you might say. But they all were interested in baseball.
Almost had your own team.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
What was the age range, basically, between your youngest brother and yourself?
Well, let's see, it's 76, and Tom is 40. No, he's not even, he's 62.
About
40. Well, we were pretty close together.
Yeah, you probably played.
Of course, both of my brothers next to me are both passed away. They were both in the service. And they saw a lot of service during World War II and then plus the other war too, the Korean
War.
But they both passed away, but I have three other brothers still living besides the South and three sisters. And they're all, we've all been very close. We live in proximity up here, you know, all of us have been very close to each other.
Now, when you finished high school, how did you get into organized baseball?
Well, my reputation of playing ball.
Did any scouts come by?
Oh, yeah. Polk Whalen, John Whalen, I don't know whether you know him or not. He was an area coach here for Pittsburgh Pirates. Well, first of all, I'm getting ahead of myself. First of all, it was Joe Cambria. I don't know if you remember Cambria with Washington State.
Yes,
Papa
yeah,
Joe.
Right, yeah. He signed two Cubans, I believe.
Right, a lot of them.
Clark Griffin.
Yeah, and he was an area scout here. So I signed at first with Washington Senators in 1940, right out of high school. So I graduated in 39, 40. I went down to Newport, Tennessee, and that was only about a month or so of the season left when I went down there. And then I wanted to play ball back here because war was coming in. 40,
by the way, in those days, did they give anything like a bonus, signing bonus?
No, bonus, no. No, I got $60 a month. That was it.
Did they supply, of course, they supply transportation.
Oh, yeah.
About housing and food?
No. Meal money. You got meal money, but not housing. You had to fend for yourself on your housing.
Okay.
But then, that was about the last month of the season down there. And then I came back, and there's a good ball club back here who wanted me to play with them. And I wasn't gonna go back to baseball next year because I got a job with an automatic screw machine place down here in Elkridge, Davis and Hempel. And they had a lot of it was all defense work, war work. And my mother, she warned me and advised me if I would please try to stay out as long as I could. Because at that time, my two brothers next to me were both in the service, one in the Navy, one in the Army. So I said, yeah, I'll try mine. So I got the 3 6-month deferments back here. But then the Battle of Bulge came along, they took everybody. One-legged people, one-armed people, everybody. You know, anyway, in the meantime, I played on a ball club around here, Spring Grove. We won everything around here. It was a semi-pro club. At that time, Martin Bombers had a good team. And Martin himself called me. And he said, Jack,
Glenn Martin?
Yeah, Glenn L. Martin. Mm-hmm. He called me one day. because he wanted to have the best, just like Steinbrenner and them, you know. So he called me and said, "Jack, you come down here to work with me. You won't have to worry at all about your service." Of course, it's down Middle River, you know, and I live here, you know, traveling back and forth. It would have been an opportunity, you know, because they traveled all over the place. But I said, "No, I'm sorry," but I, you know, eventually, like I said, I was drafted into service. And actually, it took me out of, well, I didn't go back into playing professional ball until 47. It was my first year after, my first part of the year, because of, well, the war and everything, you know, just kept me out of there. So.
You mentioned, were you in the Battle of the Bulge?
No. Okay. I didn't go overseas at all.
Oh.
I didn't go overseas at all, which I was happy about. My mother was happy about, too, because both of my one brother next to me, he was in all the bombing. He was on the Arkansas, Battleship Arkansas, and they bombed the shores over here for D-Day. He went to South Africa, and he went to Italy, and then after he finished there, they went over into the Pacific. Now, he was on the South Dakota, but one of the other battleships, and he went over there and bombed the islands over there when they went in and, you know, invaded those islands. So he saw a heck of a lot of service. And then my other brother, he was in the Army. He was over there too, in England, and then he went over to Germany and France and everywhere. I mean, they were very fortunate to come home, but I believe that that was part of their why they passed away so fast. And of course, heart problems is another thing. All of our boys, all of us, had heart problems. We all had bypasses, except my two oldest brothers next to me, and they didn't have time to. Because the boy, one was in the Army, he was ready to get discharged from the Army. He had made a career of it. He was down at Fort Meade here playing softball with the team, and he was playing first. Pop, I went up, he went to get it. Ball hit him on the chest, dropped, and he was dead, just like that. And then my other brother, Bill, well, they both died at 46 years old. My brother Bill, he had heart problems too. But he lived a couple of years after. And then I had a heart attack at 46 also. And I had a five-way bypass with aneurysm, two back operations.
Wow.
So I'm kind of limited to what I'm doing, right. You know. I can't pinch it anymore.
Right. Okay, so now, and so after the war, then, you went with Uniontown in the Middle Atlantic League?
Yeah.
You had a great year, didn't you?
Yeah. 388 was.
I guess that probably led the league?
No. It's Alex Garbowski. He was a shortstop with the Phoenicians. Philadelphia. He ended up hitting, I think it was 392, and I hit 388. But I didn't leave. Well, that led to all the minor leagues at that time. Of course, he got a silver bat for leading the minor league, you know, Louisville Slugger.
Now, was Uniontown part of any major league?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So how did you get?
Well, see, I got after. Well, this guy Hobart Ford, he was a dentist down in Newport, Tennessee, and he was the boss of the team he had down there. And I wrote him the year before. That was in 41. Yeah, would he please give me my release so I could play ball up here, semi-pro ball? Because I couldn't play up here at home unless I had a release from a professional player. Couldn't play doing that unless I had a release.
You had to get the release from Washington.
I had to get a senator from Newport. And he promised if I ever played ball again to sign back with them. I promised him, you know, with my fingers crossed, I guess. But anyway, but then we had a tournament up in Harrisburg. And, I was playing with the Spring Grove team here, Spring Grove Hospital team over here. And we were the best. We had played in the North Baltimore Major League, which included the Martin Bombers, Coast Guard, and all the good teams around here. But we beat them. So we went up there in a tournament, and he saw me playing up there, and he wanted to sign, and he signed me up there.
How much, like I say, there were no bonuses, so you just...
No. I started out at, that was $250 a month.
This was back in 47?
47. Mm-hmm. But I was on, I went to spring training with Albany Senators.
Was that a,
and then they optioned me to Uniontown. So they could pay me $250. I'd got less than that if had I not been optioned down there, but I got optioned down.
Albany was part of the Pittsburgh
system? Yes, at that time.
Okay. Now, you played basically second base?
Second base most of the time. I had played infield. Of course, the last 4 years, I played out on the coast with San Diego Padres. But they had me playing everywhere. When I got older, I played shortstop. I played some third base and played second. But actually, I wish I'd have started playing third base when I started, because I loved third base. That was really
awkward.
That was love.
And then after Uniontown, you went to York.
Right, to York.
Was that a step up higher?
Yeah, oh yeah. See, that was C ball was Uniontown, and B ball was York. Uh-huh. And of course, I was signed then by Indianapolis. Al Lopez managed them then. But then I got optioned down to York from, because I went to spring training with them, with Indianapolis. But then I got optioned down to York, Pennsylvania again. And I played there. You know.
And then after that, you were 2 years with New Orleans.
New Orleans, yeah. New Orleans. Yeah.
I guess that
one
was.
1 year was that was just a lost year. But it's Hugh Louie, he was managing down there, and he had six guys from, he was from Pacific Coast, Salem, Oregon, he was. And he played out in the Pacific Coast League for a while. He was managing down there, and he had all these guys, I mean, I hate to say it, but he played all these guys from the coast, you know. So that kind of, and he was a second baseman himself, so that kind of left me in the lurch, you see. But I did play some and all, but I went back next year and had a good year, and that was double A. My Southern Association.
Yeah. Now, New Orleans was probably the biggest city you had played in before then.
Up to that time,
yeah.
Yes.
Did you, were you able to adjust okay?
It didn't bother me. I played baseball. I didn't care about the city at all. I didn't go. I didn't care about that.
Okay. And then in 1951, you I guess you started with Indianapolis.
Yeah, I was all the way at the end of the season with Indianapolis. I played there the whole year. And then at the end of the season, that's when I went up to Pittsburgh.
Right. Okay. Now, when you were first year at Pittsburgh towards the end of the season,
mm-hmm.
Was Dick Grote with the team then?
Yeah, he had just come. He had just come with us then, and out of Duke. And I always try to befriend the young guys, you know, to make them feel at home and everything. And he come to me and he said, well, he called me Johnny up there. He said, Johnny, he said, think I can, they left me in a batting cage, take some batting. I said, sure, get in there. Jump in front of Connor. Don't bother about them guys. Get in there. You're a member of the team now, you know. So he did, he adjusted very well. Of course, you know what the outcome of him was. I mean,
yeah.
It was great.
I guess in those days, there weren't too many college players.
No, they didn't emphasize college like they do nowadays. Of course, college players now, I guess they could play A or double A ball right out of college, but they're good. I watch it, College World Series, and those guys are good. Very good. I mean, and they know baseball. They know the fundamentals and everything. So they're ready. A lot of them are ready for major league ball right out of college. They really are.
Now, when you came with Pittsburgh, Kiner was with the team.
Yeah, Kiner was with us.
And who was the manager?
Billy Meyer. Bill Meyer was the manager. Yeah, we had him and Wally Westlake and Gus Bell. And, oh Lord.
Bob, was Bob friend with the team?
Yeah, Bob was there, and then Brian Law. All the younger ones started out there, and they had good years after that were there. And of course, Gradual, he came with us too. He brought a year with us in Pittsburgh. And Eddie, the guy you sketched with the Senators, Eddie Fitzgerald. He was with us for a while. Clyde McCullough. And, George Metkiewicz. There's a lot of them. We had a fair club. We didn't have any pitching at all. We had a fair.
Was
fair
Vance Rickey with
us? Oh, yeah. That's a good dude.
What do you remember about him?
Oh, man. Everything. He was a character. I remember in spring training, we were at San Bernardino, California. We trained out there with Pittsburgh. But I trained with them, too, 2 years. He would call the guys up who hadn't signed yet into the hotel, in his room, the hotel, after the workout, and they'd go up there, you know, and say, you know, we'd all kid him and all. So Danny Murtaugh's turn came to go up there. And he was up there about 45 minutes, I guess, and he come down on the elevator, you know, and I said, well, Dan, how'd you make out? And he always smoked cigarettes. He said, well, boys, I feel like I owe him some money, he said. So that was his reputation. You know, he started saying RBI, how many RBIs you have, how many men left on base, how many on second base, third base, all this kind of stuff. So he would try to belittle you, you know, and that was his nature.
Now, when you came up with Pittsburgh, how much, do you remember how much what the salary was?
Well, it was $5,000 was the minimum.
It had a minimum.
Yeah, but I was getting six. Uh-huh. I was getting $6,000.
That was the first year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I basically made, even the second year.
Uh-huh. Was it, in those days, one-year contracts?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You didn't get any multi-year contract at that time. You're lucky to get one-year one.
They had to produce every year, though.
Yeah, right. Well, 51, that was my best year financially, too, because I played. Well, I was optioned down to Indianapolis from Pittsburgh, and I got my $6,000. But even the difference between what Indianapolis paid me and my salary, that Pittsburgh would send me a check every month or so. But then after that year, this guy in Puerto Rico called me and asked me if I'd play winter ball. And so I had to call Pittsburgh, and she was all right. And she said, yeah, fine. So I went down there and stayed down there for 2 months until I broke my thumb. And they paid me $1,000 a month down there. Plus, first month, my family went everywhere I went. I mean, they went everywhere except the 1 year at Uniontown. They didn't go then, but they went with me. But I didn't have them at then now, but I got five children. We always went everywhere.
I mean, the kids went along.
Oh, yeah. Right. That was one of the reasons why I quit when I did. I was 36, about 34 years old. Because of the kids running back and forth from the coast down here and winning three schools in a year, you know. So I said, well.
You came out to Pittsburgh probably in your late 20s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that was because of the war.
Right. It was, 51, and I was 29 when I came up. Born in 22, and that was
it. You remember your first major league hit?
Yeah, double right field off of Preacher Row.
Preacher Row?
Sure do, a line drive to right field. Uh-huh. Off of Preacher Row, yeah.
And how about your first homer?
Yeah, that was off of,
Herm Wehmeyer?
Herm Wehmeyer, right. Herm Wehmeyer, yeah. And it was a high pitch, and he had me 2-2, and he threw a high fastball. He was a pretty good fastball pitcher. And then thing was up there, of course, me being a country boy, I love those high pitches anyway. And I hit it. It was in fourth field. I hit it real good. He cussed me all the way around the base.
You damn looking, you know.
All this kind of stuff. But I said, I got almost home, but I said, hi, Herm. Just a touch home plate, you know. But hey, you mad at that. I hit him pretty good. No, Robin, you can know him. I used to, hit him pretty good, too.
Was there any pitcher you really didn't want to face?
Your Blackwell. Your left shoulder, man, I'm telling you, he was something. Even Connor hated him. He hated me when he pitched. He said, Skip, can I take a day off? That's because he was pitching. But he was rough in his heyday. He was rough. Of course, that was Kurt Simmons, left hand. He was rough, and what's his name? The old Boston Braves, Warren Spahn. Well, there was a lot of rough ones. I mean, even the jump from Triple A to the majors, it's a jump, because those pitchers just a little bit, you know. But then when you start hitting a good pitcher, I mean, like Carl Erskine, I could hit him any day of the week. But other pitchers, they say if you hit a how'd you pitch that Mercy? And they get together, you know, and from all the teams, not only ones on the one team, but they all get together. So that's their bread and butter to get you out, so that's what they do. They really do.
1951, we had the Giants fighting for the pennant. Were you involved in any game as far as those teams were?
Well, I pride myself in winning one of the ball games when they came over to Pittsburgh near the end of the season when they were real close.
The Giants
and the Dodgers were real close. And that one game, we won 11-4 or 11-5, something like that. And I drove in 6 runs.
One game?
And yeah, in one game, I got 4 base hits.
Was that against the Dodgers?
Because he wasn't married or anything. of course, I was away from home and everything and on the road. And we used to eat together, you know. And we became very, very close. And, of course, I used to see him when they came here, when the Angels came here to play the Orioles. Yeah, good player, man. But that guy, he was quite a guy. At least he was scared to death of Ruth. He was scared to death of Ruth. You know, I was ruined with him. He said he stayed away from him as much as possible. But his real name was Abraham Solomon. Jimmy Reeves. But he was a great guy. He was a wonderful person. And he played in the Coast for several years. I'm sure he's recognized in it. But he was a good, he was second baseman too. He was quick, he was fast, and punched the ball around. He didn't have many home runs at all, but he played out there. Well, he's on the all-time team out there in the Pacific Coast. He was good. Yes, indeed. And we had some good ball clubs out there, too. Calavito was out there for a while. Man, well, this Rocky Calavito. He was having a hard time at Cleveland. They sent him out there to get straightened out, you know. And he was out there for a while. In fact, there's a lot of former major leaguers go out there. That's a graveyard for baseball, you might say, Pacific Coast League. Because it's great weather, ideal weather. You fly everywhere. So you couldn't get to the places from Seattle to San Diego or, you know, one day or something. Because it's train, you know, trains and all that stuff is so bad. So we flew everywhere. And we stayed a whole week at each place we played. We stayed a whole week. So we have a two-week road trip. We go to Portland and Seattle. It takes us 2 weeks, a week at each place. And like I say, we flew everywhere. I mean, the conditions are ideal. An old guy could last a long while out there.
In the majors, did you fly in the majors?
No, never. That was all trains. All trains. Yes, sir.
Any opinions on the way the game's played today?
Well, the major difference I see is the pitching. I mean, the pitchers in our day, they want to pitch nine innings. You know, I mean, actually, most of your relief pitchers at that time were secondary pitchers. I mean, they weren't, you know, able to be starters. But these guys nowadays, I mean, they specifically want relief pitchers just to pitch two or three or four innings. You know. But these guys, a lot of them, I see when I watch all my baseball on television now. I don't even go into Fort Hill Park or Camden Yard. I'd rather sit here very peacefully, drink my drink, and just watching from a distance. But those guys are looking. Some of them are looking for help. And after they've made a complete game and they've got a 4 or 5 run lead or so, they're looking for help to get out of the ball game. It's a terrible thing to say, I know, but that's my opinion. And I really believe it. But that's the major difference I see. That, but of course, now speed, that's another thing. I mean, these guys nowadays, they outrun a baseball. Look at some of these catches these outfielders make. They put balls hit right in the slot, you know, right?
The gap.
Yeah, and they outrun them. First thing you know, they're diving, they got the baseball. And of course, the gloves are that long, too, you know. And that takes a lot of base hits away from these guys now. But of course, our gloves are about that big. You know. But that's amazing. That makes a big difference. Just those few inches like that. Even in your infield, it's catching ground balls coming through. That makes a big difference. Sure does. But otherwise, I mean, the guys are good. I mean, they're good. Man. No doubt about it.
In the majors, did you have any favorite ballpark?
I like Brooklyn.
Ebbets Field.
I like Ebbets Field, yeah. I like that ballpark better anyway. Of course, Pittsburgh, I like that too.
How about fans? Were there any cities that the fans maybe were more abusive or more into it?
No, I don't think so. They're good. They were good everywhere. Of course, they're close to you at Brooklyn. They're very close to you, close to the field. But then and the only thing there was at Brooklyn when you come out after a ball game, these kids that want autographs. And
Well, most of them have these penny postcards. They were penny then. And he said, take a card, mister, take a card, take a card. And he walked by, just take the card and put it in your pocket, and it's got their name and address on the front.
Oh.
And all you do when you get back to the hotel or whatever is just sign them and then throw them in the mailbox, and they get them. Well, some of these kids, they didn't have those things. Maybe probably didn't have the money to get them, I guess. But anyway, if you wouldn't sign for them, if you had a nice work coat on or some kind, you know, they had the pens that you had to fill with ink well, you know, throw the ink on your coat and then run if you didn't sign, you know. They were something, but that was the only thing. I mean, they were real, real good in that respect. Yeah, we had some times. But it was one thing and always that the only thing I ever wanted to do in life was play baseball. And my mother said it was the first time she remembered me about baseball, and it was on the kitchen table down in my house. Of course, at that time, our house was right down here, about 2 or 3 blocks. Big house, all the kids were in. And we lived with my grandmother and grandfather at that time. And he was playing with me on the table with this ball, this rolling tin. I was just little. I mean, she had somebody to prop me up and roll it. And I was just starting to talk, he said, and Poppy held the ball a long while, teasing me. And they said, one of the first words I said was, throw the damn ball, Pop. So that's one of the first things that they say to remember, you know, about that ball. But I just play baseball all the time. All the time. That's all I ever wanted to do, be a major league ball player.
When you finished with the minor leagues in San Diego, did you play any ball locally here?
Not at all. Not at all. I just all my time with the family, because I was away from them. Even though you've got your family with you on the road, when you're playing away from home, you're away from them half the time anyway. You know, playing away from home, you play away from home as much as you do at home. And, wife raising the kids, you might say, far south. We used to drive back and forth from here out to San Diego every year. And that was 8 trips. So we went in a car, we packed the car up. And of course, we got out there, we made $150 or so, because you could submit a voucher for first class airfare out there. And of course, we went out as cheap as we could, you know. And we and of course, spring training then, you didn't get any money. You got $25 a week, you know, for incidentals, for laundry and that stuff. And then they give you, if you play an exhibition game away from where you're training, well, they give you meal money, you know. But that's all we got in spring training. So we try to do as, you know, save as much as we possibly could.
When you got your contract in Major League Baseball, was there any kind of negotiations, or, I mean, did you have a say in the matter, or they just...
Not much. Not the first year, you know, when you first... Ricky sent his son, French Ricky Jr., down here to Baltimore, to the Emerson Hotel. Well, they called me ahead of time, said I was going to be down, you know, they would come down here, and would it be okay, come down and talk the contract. So there's not much negotiating to it now, you know. Because you start opening your mouth like, hey, I'm in the major league, $200,000. Well, you got to prove yourself and all this stuff. So you don't have much negotiating power unless you had, I had a good year, but still it wasn't in the major league. So I didn't have much to negotiate.
When you played in the Winter League, was it just 1 year?
Yeah, just in 51.
Did you play with any well-known players who became?
Oh, yeah, well, John Lindell was down. And this boy, he was a pitcher in the Red Sox organization. Charlie, left-hand pitcher. But he was up with them for a little while. He was still up. Jim Atkins, he was right-hand, big right-hand pitcher. He was there. Yes, that's about all. That was all from the States. It was on our team. We played the Mayaguez, which is on the other end of the island from San Juan. The San Juan and San Tercey, in August. And there's five teams.
Did you have any language problems?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, no, you'd get in the paper, but I couldn't read it. And every once in a while, you see the road up there, and then you say, you got John Lee Merson. That's the only thing I'd read your name, you know. But, no, it wasn't because a lot of them who played there were from there, but they played ball back in the States, and they knew some English, you see, and you could converse pretty well. Once in a while, my wife did with school, she had a terrible time, you know, trying to make them understand what she wanted and so forth. Overall, it wasn't bad overall. It was an experience. Of course, the kids, they learned language before we could. We had two kids, you know, two of them, boy and a girl. They could speak that stuff, and all the little kids they played with, and they learned a lot of stuff before we even knew it. So they do learn fast. But it was good, too. And it was good to get home from there, too, because it was approaching Christmas time, and I broke my thumb down. And of course, this guy named Alfonso Valdez, he owned the team down, and he was a big sugar cane guy. And he said, well, Johnny, if you want to go home, he said, I'll give you an extra $1,000. I said, okay with me, I'm gone. We were glad to get home for Christmas. Yeah. It was a great experience. I wouldn't trade a minute of it for me. I know my wife would either. She loved to travel after we got started. She was ready to go on spring training before I was. Then your oldest boy, he was in the Marine Corps, and we had made another trip out on the coast after I finished playing ball in 61 or 2. And he was going over to Vietnam, so we drove all the way out there again, all of us. Then we had four kids at that time, and we drove out there again. Spent a week out there. But, we didn't hesitate to go, you know, traveling. We were veteran travelers for that time. I ended up, all of a sudden, some people, I spent my last 18 and a half years in jail before I retired. Because I was in the correctional system. And here at the House of Correction, 18 and a half. A year and a half in the service.
Jessup?
Count Jessup. And I got up to captain and the ship commander and so forth. Which is the best thing I ever did, because now I got a good retirement and I don't have to worry about that.
Great.
I don't get anything baseball to us, but wasn't in it long time. I made it good. But it's good.
Did they have pensions in those days? I mean, did they get pensions? I mean, if you had
baseball?
Yeah,
you had to have that. Well, at that time, you had to have 5 years. But then they got down to, you got it? And then they got down to 4 years. If that was the worst ever got.
Well,
anything else?
All right.
Never. Well. No, I saw all of our kids. I mean, we're proud of our kids. They're all close to us here. They live close to all of us. I got two boys in the state troopers. They're two state troopers. My oldest boy, he's 54 years old now. And he was a Baltimore County firefighter, farmer. And he's retired now. So they're all in public service.
Yeah.
My oldest daughter, so they're right across the street here. And like I said, my youngest daughter is down in, she just moved down here 3 years ago down in Kentucky. She was close. She lived over in Lansdowne for a while. But they're all pretty close. You know. We got a swimming pool down back here, and that's 30 years old now. And I was at the time I couldn't afford to do it, but I did it anyhow. The guy taught me into it. A local guy here that had the swimming pool. Swimming pool, a good swimming pool. Anyway, he had the contract with Terry. He wanted me to put one in, and he'd give me a good deal on it, so I could demonstrate it to other people. So, well, I don't know. Pretty close. He said, well, you can make it. So anyway, we scrambled and scratched and all, and paying for the house and doing that too. So we finally got it paid for. which was the best thing I ever did too, for the kids. I always wanted the kids to be able to take care of themselves. And now we got the 12 grandkids and three great grandkids.
Yeah.
And to take care of them, you know, the size of them, they all dive off the diving board now. Even the little boy, he's 2.5 years old, he'll jump off that diving board. And so that was another thing that I wanted to accomplish.
Did any umpires ever give you a hard time? You had problems with another.
Oh yeah, we had arguments, but no. I let them alone. I didn't talk to them much. But of course, then I'd probably raise double them now. The way they call them ball and strike, it is terrible. I mean, it is terrible. I mean, even though most people say, well, you don't have the right aspect. You're tougher from them. Angle is bad, you know, you can't tell. But you can tell where that catcher catches the ball, you know. And when that guy reaches out here to catch the ball, that is not a strike. I don't care what you say, it's not going to curve that much, you know. But that plate is too close to the catcher's glove. And it can't curve as much as they, you know, to call it a strike. And that umpire, they just call whatever they want a strike. And you haven't got any recourse. Can't say a word to them anymore. Can't even blink your eyes at them until you have the ball. But we did at that time. We could raise double with it and all, you know. But they'd always say, well, Johnny, you say you make mistakes, don't you? You ever make an error? Well, you got, you can't say anything, because you do, you know. And they were all good umpires at that time. They were good umpires. Very good.
Were you ever coming out of the game?
No, never was coming out of the ball. I couldn't afford to lose the money. No, I never was. There was only one time, I was out in Chicago. I come to coast was getting thrown out. And I was playing second base. And the ball was hit to, let's see what it was. Hit out in left center, if you will. Bushy Ivy, who owned the ball at all. And I can't remember who it is, another coach. Might have been Hank Sauer. Anyway, I'm probably getting missed, you know. Home run. Man, I ran up to him, that ball didn't go. And of course, you get a double, you know. It just hung up in the vine, ground a little double. I said, you better shut up, you're going to be out of here. I said, okay, will you let me go and find that ball? I'll find it for you. I know exactly where it is. So, Bobby Del Greco was our center fielder for a time. And we went out there. And he said, I don't think that thing went over either, John. I said, I don't think anything go over. So he put me, I got up on his, not on his shoulder, but his hand, but I had my spikes on. You know, I got as far as I could, and I reached in, and I was thinking, I got, pretty soon that ball fell out. I said, here it is, there it is. And he still gave the guy a home run. He still wouldn't change his decision. And I almost got thrown out that time. I was mad. I was really.
What umpire was that? You remember?
I think it was Artie Gore. He had some good. Well, he was good too. He just sort of went out of ball for him. And the next day, he stayed umpire, the same umpire, had the whole series here. You know? I saw him the next day. I said, "Damn, Artie, I thought you'd get a pair of glasses last night." What are you talking about? I said, you can't see. He just slept it off and laughed a little bit. I said, that's so sweet, you get a pair of glasses. I never fooled him after that, because I thought, well, you're going to get me back if you can. He didn't. Well, he had some great times.
You weren't with the Red Sox very long, were you?
No. I was only back to, well, I cut down time in May or June, I don't know, end of May or something. I had to cut down to 25 players. And then that's when they sold me.
Was Bobby Doerr playing at the time?
No, he was playing at that time. Ted Williams wasn't even there. He was flying in Korea. They had his, locker and everything all set up. You couldn't even come close. That was a shrine, you know. And the shoes were all shine, everything was just perfect. And he's got a Orlando. What was his first name? But anyway, he was a clubhouse.
Johnny Orlando.
Johnny Orlando and his brother. They took care of the stuff. Man, I'm telling you, he wouldn't make you go close to that lot. Because Williams gave him about $1,000 a month for taking care of, you know. When he got paid. He wouldn't let you go close. He's not here. He said he might walk in that door any time, and I want that thing to be clean when he walks in that door. So he kept it that way.
Was Mel Parnell with the team then?
Yeah, Mel was there. And Billy Goodman.
How about Jimmy Pearsall?
Yeah, Pearsall.
What about Pearsall?
Listen, I'm telling you. Let's see that one. Oh, I know. He was in spring training with us, and we had an exhibition game in Birmingham. At that time, Birmingham was a farm club of the Red Sox. And we were all out, was out there, and our hitting practice was just over there. And then this boy, this outfielder, was with Birmingham. They come out on the field to take his practice, he was back practice. The guy came up with Pearsall and he shook his hand and everything. Hi, Jim, how you doing? Oh, he had played with him before. And he said, oh, hi, you know how you do. Even though you don't know a guy, you're going to say, oh, hi. And then after I think it was Stevens.
Vern Stevens?
Huh? Vern Stevens? Not Vern, it was outfield, left-hand outfield. He eventually come up with the Red Sox.
It's very, very quick and very easy. That might give some illumination into this.
And he was coming out on the field.
Gene Stevens.
And they had played together. And after he had gone by us and all, he kept on chopping towards the dugout. Pearsall said, who is that guy? He said, I don't even know him. He said, I told him I know him. I don't even know him. And they played together the year before that. And that's how he was really. You know, Jim was really in a fog. I mean, he was in rough shape for a couple of years. But he straightened himself out, and he had some good years after that. But he was, with that incident, I'll never forget that. And there was someone else trying off field with us, too, and I can't remember who it was. But he said, John, did you see Pearsall on who they got? He played with him last year.
Did you have anything to do with Tom Yawkey?
No. I know. In fact, I never saw him. Well, I saw him sitting up in the box. I never had any words with him. But Bob Rice was the
General manager
and all at that time.
And was Joe McCarthy the manager?
No. Boudreaux. Lou Boudreaux. He was a manager, yeah. Yeah. And I think the best manager, well, there's two of them. It's a toss-up between Lefty O'Doul and this Frank Osiak. Osiak, he was a manager of York. York White Roses. Had the Lancaster Red Roses and the York White Roses. Baseball team. But anyway, he was our manager there, and he was actually, if you can remember the picture of Mazeroski coming around third base after he hit home run against the Yankees, Osiak was a third base coach.
Pittsburgh
third base coach. Which I'm glad he got to that point, but he deserved that. But he never played any major league ball, but he knew baseball. And he could teach baseball. He was good. And he'd get mad with you when you deserved to be yelled at and so forth. To impress you, that's very good. But he was about the best manager I've ever had in baseball. And with Frank Osiak. There's a lot of.
In order to deal with the problem. So it's really the complexity, the scope of the problem, and the interconnectedness that's really the issue.
Los Osos, California, you're next.
Yeah, hi. My name is Mac, and I've got a Macintosh. Now, I understand that the Macintoshes themselves aren't really that susceptible to this problem. What about the programs that have been written for them? And secondly, The company I work for, Gary Player Golf, they use a lot of credit cards in their business. And how well are the credit card companies doing?
Ed Marr.
Well, you're right. The Mac doesn't have this problem because it calculates dates differently, and so they don't have the ROM BIOS problem that exists in the PC world. However, as I do, I also use a Mac. I use products from other companies such as Microsoft,